Blog Talk Radio.
General quarters. Security condition 3.
HQ. Security 3, sir. General quarters 3. Intruder alert. GQ 3. Intruder alert.
Oh, my intruder alert. Who could it be? This is Madam Perry here on Thursday night for a change. And, this is no ordinary intruder. This is Cheetah Chrome. Welcome, Cheetah. Welcome to Madam Perry's Salon.
Good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. Doing great. So, come on in. Have a seat. You like what I've done with the place?
Yeah,
that kind
of
a genius.
Nice. Mr. Sulu door guy. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's got some free time. So he has some free time, and I needed a doorman, and I was working this over. Of course, you know, he's great at helping me with the decor. That's how we got this I Dream of Genies bottle.
You
got
to keep him off of Facebook, though. You know, he's on Facebook all the time, too, though. Yeah.
Constantly. You can't get good help anymore, Cheetah, so you just...
No, you can't.
But I'm grateful for him. You know, he's got a lot of style, a lot of flair. He's pretty cool. How are you doing? How you feeling?
Oh, pretty good today. I'm getting ready to go out to San Francisco tomorrow, and so I'm just, packing and doing all that fun stuff that I like to do.
All right. And how long are you going to be in San Francisco?
Just till Sunday.
Uh-huh.
I'm doing the San Francisco Punk Renaissance show with the Avengers and the Lude and Drunk Engines and a bunch of bands. And going to have a special guest, James Williamson, is going to join me for a couple songs.
Oh, really?
And, I got him coming out, and we're going to do a couple of studio songs. And I got Ralph Carney from Tom Waits' band coming out to play sax on a song.
Ah.
Yeah, so it's going to be a fun weekend.
It is. It's going to be like a great summer camp for adults.
Yeah, sort of. Right? It's gonna be, tomorrow night's going to be the fun part, because we got like 3 hours in the studio just to, you know, dick around, and that's going to be, you know, that's going to be fun. I've never been able to have those two guys at my disposal for 3 hours just to play before, so that's going to be fun. Yeah, the Street Walking Cheetahs are backing me up on this. So it's going to be a...
Oh, really?
Street Walking Cheetahs? Yeah, they're my band for this show. So it's going to be overall, tomorrow night's going to be a really fun night, and Saturday should be pretty stellar, too.
Yeah, because that's what I was going to ask you, was who's playing with you here?
Yeah, I use those guys on the West Coast most of the time because they're old buddies of mine, and, you know, we've done a lot of gigs together. We've even, you know, been over to Spain together, and, you know, just feels right with them out there. You know, I got bands all over the place, but I'm pretty well settled on a band here in Austin, Texas that I love. So I'm probably going to be using them pretty soon on everything.
All right. So how do you like it there in Austin?
I love it. It's a nice town. You know, I've always liked coming here for South by Southwest and for playing here, you know. And, of course, I've never actually been in the place when it wasn't, you know, something going on like crazy with 300,000 extra people. And, I came down here thinking, this is going to be kind of nice and there's not going to be anybody there. Well, the traffic's just as fucking bad as it was, you know, during South by Southwest. And, it's a nice town. I like it here. I'll be going back and forth between here and Nashville for the foreseeable future.
If you happen to get out to a place called Maggie May's there.
Yeah.
I think on Friday nights is when the Jiggle Watts Burlesque Girls play. And my dear friend, Coco Electric, performs there.
Okay.
And she was a queen of burlesque in the U.S.
Okay. Well, I'll look for that. I haven't been downtown a lot since I've been here. I've been mostly writing songs and just kind of being a good boy and chilling out.
So we can expect some fresh Cheetah Chrome music?
Oh, yeah, a whole bunch of it. Yeah, we've got about 12 songs and we're not done writing yet. So it's we have quite a creative little burst here. You know, my new band, they're all good writers as well. So we've kind of pitched everything into the pot. And I want to give them a shout out, actually. That's Jason Cotwitz on guitar, Gabe Van Asher on bass, and Chris Alanis on drums. And they're from a band here in town called the Bulimics. That off. We played before. I met them one time at South by. They had a band called us, Flamethrower Love, that did Dead Boys cover. So I got to play with them. And it flowered into this relationship.
I like it. So the Polemics in Austin, yeah, definitely give them a shout out, give them some love on the air. And we'll shout out to them again before we get off the show. So, like I said, the musicians need love too.
That's right. More than most people, actually. Yeah.
I married one. What are you talking?
Yeah, right. I want mine and several other people's if I can get it.
That's who did my intro music, my husband. So, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Uh-huh.
I didn't know you were married to Mr. Sula.
Pardon me?
I thought, you married to Mr. Sula?
No, he's the doorman.
Oh, he's the doorman. Okay.
And he's gay. So, no, we're not married. We don't even have to, and he doesn't have to have a beard anymore. If he wants to marry a guy, he can. But, no, my husband's a musician that did the song, so Denton out there. And, yeah. All right. So, I wanted to start and tell you about, I read your book, Cheetah Chrome, A Dead Boy's Tale, from the front lines, punk rock. And let me tell you, I love the fact, and I'm a big reader, and I have a lot of authors on here, but I love the fact that your book is so raw and so honest. And, and like you said, there were some things that you didn't want to tell. You said, I don't want to say this. I hate this.
I got another book. Yeah. I mean,
I was going to say.
The first one, yeah.
Hey, Cheetah, I'm an entertainment publicist. I'm here for you when that next one's ready. I am ready to catch that thing and run with it. But the things where you said, I don't want to talk about this. I mean, I'm ashamed of this. I'm not happy about it. But if I don't tell it, it's real. That's it, because another friend of mine, well, she's passed now, but I don't know if you know, there's a jazz singer named Anita O'Day.
Yeah.
And her book was High Times, Hard Times. And of course, you start with a crisis point. And her started with going to her agent's office and getting something from the secretary, going to the bathroom, pulling out her works, getting it done, and had a heart attack right there. And so, it's like that. That was when I read that book. Then I was starting to realize why all my favorite jazz singers always wore long gloves in the CD covers. Annie Ross and Anita O'Day. But yeah, she was the same way. She says she pulled it out there. She says, "Hey, this is the way it happened." So, and it makes me respect
you. Big secret,
What?
I said it's not like it was any big secret. So be out there,
No, but it's like you didn't blame other people. You didn't say, "Oh, it's not my fault," whatever. So that's pretty cool. And of course, I got to say one thing I do have in common with you. I knew what it was like to grow up with red hair when it wasn't popular.
Oh, right.
It was relentless torment.
Oh, it was. You had the name Eugene and glasses to it. Oh, I had to learn how to fight early.
Yeah, I had glasses, red hair. I mean, it was like everybody had to remind you from all the insults in case you had forgotten from the day before.
Yeah, right.
But that was in the south side of Atlanta. They're all dead now. But let's go on to your book, though.
Once I got older, the girls liked it, so that was cool,
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So now, how long did it take you to write Tales
of
a Dead Boy?
About a year and a half. I mean, it was 6 months I was probably putting it off. I mean, kind of piddling at it, you know, and organizing it, researching it. And then when I actually sat down to write it, I was thinking, oh, I'm going to knock this out, but it's going to be easy, you know. And I was thinking, oh, I should be able to do 10 pages a day. I'll do this thing in a month. Well, you're lucky you get 3 pages a day, you know. And by the time you correct it, you know, and think of, you know, get it right, it's like, man, this is tougher than I thought. And then, you know, I get the note from my publisher telling me, oh, well, you know, we love it, but you're up to page 200, you know, 57. You're only up to 1977. You got to, you know.
You didn't use a ghostwriter, did you?
No, not at all. I wrote every word myself.
Okay. Well done.
Yeah, it was, I was not going to use a ghostwriter. I mean, I made that clear to them. If they had any, you know, aspirations in that direction, I wasn't involved. I wasn't interested because it was, you know, I felt like it should. When I read a book like that, I want to come out of it feeling like I know the person a little bit better, you know. And so I just wanted to kind of have it like I was, you know, telling stories to some friends in a bar or something like that, you know, and mm-hmm. give it that kind of a feel. So it had to come from me, you know.
Right. As you lived it. What was it like when you first, when you were first playing music and, you know, you were talking about when you first, you know, you kind of wasn't sure what you were going to do, what you were going to be. You're growing up in what, Cleveland, Ohio?
Yes.
I know, I'm sorry.
Like Frau Blucher, you know. You know.
Oh, God.
You say Cleveland, like, you know, horse whinnying in the background.
You know? It's like that. Oh, who's the science fiction writer that was from Russia? Oh, his name escapes me now. Very famous
Asimov?
Science fiction writer. Yes,
Asimov?
Yes. Well, you know where he says he was born, much to his surprise, in Russia. Yeah, and so there you are. You know, it's kind of like, you know, I don't know where I belong, but I know it's not here. Kind of feeling is what I was getting.
Oh yeah, somebody didn't want to be, you know, they didn't want to be born there, but they wanted to be close to their mother. You know?
Yeah.
You know.
And then you discover music, and that's what strikes a chord in your soul. And I think that sometimes it's the thing like that you're supposed to do, that your soul calls you to do, that, you know, when you find it, you know, you hit that nerve inside. And it's then all of a sudden you find, like, I found my home.
That was definitely it. I mean, my son was asking me, he's like, Dad, you know, I want to play guitar. And I told him, well, you know, yeah, I'd love it if you did, you know, but, you know, you're going to show me, he goes, you're going to teach me? And I said, well, yeah, I'm going to teach you, but if I start teaching, you're going to have to practice, you know, you have to do, you know, all the right stuff, because I'm not going to waste my time, you know?
Yeah,
like, if you're not going to take it seriously, I just, you know, I was honest with him. I said, you know, if you're not going to play, I'm telling anybody who wants to start sponsoring a play, it's like, man, if you're not going to practice and put in the hours to learn it, it's not worth doing, you know? If you don't love it, you know, you can teach yourself, you know, slowly and, you know, learn in 10 years. If you want me to teach you, I'll teach you fast, but I'll teach you, you know, but you got to practice, you know?
Yeah.
I tried giving lessons for a while to some people, and they, you know, they give them something to take home and practice, and the next week they come home, they go, oh, you know, I didn't teach it to them again. About the fourth time I had to teach them the same thing, it's like, you know, I don't want to take your money for this. Go on, get out of here, you know?
See, how old is your son?
He's 10 now.
Oh, okay, that's about what I thought. Well, yeah, and it's like, I know a lot of musicians I've worked with that say, you know, when they teach, they say, you know, I feel like I'm a hired buddy sometimes, just sort of like a...
Yeah, you know, and he's into it, but he's honest. He's like, you know, Dad, I think I'm going to be like more into it when I'm like 13 or something like that, because, you know, right now I just want to play my video games and hang out with my friends. And I was like, yeah, that's fine, you know. And I told him, you know, they said, as soon as he finds out he girl's doing it, he'll play it. He'll be right into it, you know? So.
Right.
So I thought, hey, man, girls love guitar players.
Listen, I've got a little audio situation going on here. So, do you mind if I go ahead and play a song through it?
Not at all.
All right.
Not at all.
I'm going to play something from your solo album.
Oh, okay.
It's called Rolling Voodoo.
All right.
Yeah, that was Rolling Voodoo, and that's from the solo album by Cheetah Chrome. And Cheetah, first of all, I want to thank you not just for writing that and recording it, but for making it 5 minutes. Because when you have a dance break in the office, you know, it's going, you got to keep it going. You don't want anybody to cut you off before your time.
That's right. I like long songs.
Yeah.
You know, everybody told me I got to have a three-minute single. I was like, oh, I don't want it. It's boring.
Yeah. Is that all you got?
Yeah, right. It's where I have the best stuff. You know, I'm having my stuff, my intro's 3 minutes. You know.
Yeah, love that drum in there, that kind of that wild tribal feel. So,
Les McCult actually playing that.
Pardon me, who?
Yeah. It's Les Warner from the Cult and Ken Coon from Wilco. The drums on those, yeah.
It's all.
That's Sylvain on guitar. Saint Sylvain on guitar.
Sylvain. Where is that slacker? You know, he sent me an email. He's going to be on the show sometime. And actually, I had asked him to come on and play a kind of like a What's My Line? I'm not What's My Line. With the show one time. Every now and then we do a show called The Unusual Suspects. And it's just a group of, you know, writers, investigative journalists or whatever, musicians. And we have, it's like a big Dick Cavett kind of thing. Sort of a big... And he was going to come on and do that. And then he was leaving Austin, actually, from a gig. So he, he'd come on later. He goes, oh, I'm so sorry, I missed it. Yeah. So he goes,
yeah, he's in Nashville. I got to call him next week. I'll tell him to call you.
All right, thank you.
Because
if not, he gave me he's my private email. And I said, okay, I'll be careful with it. And I was... You know, at a truck stop, you know, because I travel a lot. And so I wrote it down on the wall in the ladies' room just so I'd remember it before I left. And then, but I didn't erase it, but I'm sure the ladies there cleaned it off. But hey, if not, I'll put it back. Anyway, so when you were talking about back to Ohio, and so when you were playing with your first musicians, getting together, finding other people who were interested in what you were doing, and the same kind of music. I loved when you were talking about finding records and listening to new sounds. Because, you know, we remember when the Beatles came and just the excitement of something fresh and new and then the other bands. And got to say, too, you know, your mother, who sounds like just such a fantastic person, she was very encouraging of your music. I mean, she didn't discourage you. She wanted the best for you, obviously, and she loved you dearly. But
yeah,
she wanted you to be happy.
Well, she saw that it was something I was going to do either way, and she realized, you know, when I was, you know, she was having to, you know, holler, you know, force me to do my homework. But as soon as I came home, I grabbed the guitar because I wanted to, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I get to the exclusion of a lot of other things. I mean, I didn't want to play sports. I didn't want to go out and hang out with my friends. You know, I'd sit in the house and literally, you know, would sit with a guitar for 3 or 4 hours, you know, and then do my homework, you know, 20 minutes.
So I'm going to skip ahead, because if people haven't read the book and they want to know the deets, they need to buy the book. And I'm going to have it on the page here. I'm going to have it on my Madame Perry Salon page on Facebook and on Twitter, where they can buy A Dead Boy's Tale and all your music. Because they should. This is one of the best books. And I read what, 10 books a month. This is one of the best you'll find. So, the skip out, so you meet musicians, you get together, there's Rocket from the Tombs. That gets to be pretty popular.
Well,
you know, you're gathering a big following.
Well, now I can't really say we were. I mean, we were getting better gigs, but we weren't really getting the following. I mean, Cleveland was a hard sell for anything original. You know, they have there's this mindset back then that, like, you know, they can't be any good. I know them. They live down the street from me. They got to suck, you know, or something.
I
don't know what it was, but they would not take you seriously if you told them you did original material. You know, they wanted you to play, like, you know, all the Doobie Brothers and all that crap, you know. And we just couldn't. You know, there's no way I could.
I know.
I mean, the closest
seriously.
I could come to commercial was Alan.
Well, listen, I know, because... You know, I had a jazz and Latin band, and whenever we'd play the bookstore, because everybody liked it because it was a shorter gig. They treated you nicer. They paid you better. And people were like, oh, you're playing there? Oh, how sweet. That's nice. Oh, I'm sorry. Can't make it, but I'm sure it's nice. And then you play at some big jazz club, or sometimes we play at a Martinis and IMAX. We were on a regular rotation there at Museum of Natural History. And people go, oh, you play there? You must be good. But my musicians didn't want to play there because they treated you like crap, they paid you crap, and they wanted you to pay for your food. So it's like, you know, they'd be thinking, you know, it's like how people have a strange perception.
Oh, yeah. We were, you know, we were like, you know, paid, what's paid? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And then you have to, get money. I don't know. I remember reading the book True Story by Bill Maher. I think it's the first book he wrote back in the 90s, I believe, about three guys, kind of a, you know, a romantic laugh about him and his friends starting off in comedy. And he says, for people, and I think this applies to musicians as well as comics, he says, people who have never had to go out gig have no idea what it's like. You know, you're always trying to get a job. And having to deal with a club owner and get money, get a book and get money, he goes, let me just put it this way. Jack Ruby was a club owner.
Yeah.
And down here, actually. And then he followed with, and I think they all see him as a role model. Just saying, you know. And I was like, that never left my mind. I've heard him do that.
So, I love Bill Maher. He's great.
So then what was it like, though, when people would come through your town, you know, some of the people that you followed, you know, like Iggy or somebody, and you met some of your, you know, the people whose records you bought, you know, who you learned from their records, and what was it like the first time you guys were all meeting your music heroes?
Well, it was, you know, pretty cool. I mean, probably the first we got to meet was probably either Sylvain and David Johansson or Alex Harvey was probably the first one we got to meet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like actually, you know, Alex Harvey was having a show up in the bar downstairs from the Agora. He played upstairs, and we were sitting down there, and next thing you know, next to us in the bar, you know, ordering a drink, you know, and we were like, oh, and he started talking to us, and, you know, we ended up sitting in the booth and hanging out with him all night, you know, he was a real nice guy. And you know, Sylvain, we had friends that knew the Dallas from New York that had met them up there. And actually Barb the Fat Bitch from the book, she married one of the Dallas roadies. Yeah, she married Max, was one of the Dallas roadies. So when they came to town this time, you know, she was meeting Max, so she took us down to the hotel, and that was pretty fun because, you know, we got to hang out with him all night. And that was the first time me and Sylvain and Steve got to hang out together. I had met Thunders previously when the Dallas played, but we had gotten in a fight because it was somebody was introducing him to me, and he said something rude to me, and I don't even know what it started, but he threw a drink at me, like, oh my god, and I jumped over a table at him and swinging, and you know, it wasn't good. And then so then I ended up meeting him again shortly, about a year later, and we got along just fine, and you know, became, you know, running buddies for years. But yeah, I mean, it was kind of cool. We knew a lot of the people, like the guys from New York, especially before we moved up there. You know, we knew like Joey and the Ramones and the guys from the Dolls, Heartbreakers.
Yeah, and you know what? I really feel sorry for people that never saw bands like, you know, you and all and the Ramones and everybody live, because I remember seeing the Ramones with the Runaways. And
yeah, the Runaways is another band we used to go and hang out with a lot. Yeah, we used to see them all the time. They Steve was a big friend with him. He had gotten somehow, I don't even know how he did this, but he became friends with Greg Shaw somehow by mail or something, or you know. And so the Runaways came out. We got to the show. We all like guest passes and everything. So that was pretty cool.
Well, listen, I've got some people, somebody's sending me in. I've got a few people that send in or email in questions, messaging questions to me for you in comments. And I'm going to open up the phone lines for people, too. The number is 646 716 9922 if you want to call in and talk with Cheetah Chrome, for God's sake, right here in Madame Perry Salon. But first, I'm going to play, I want to play another song, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
All right. How about, this is from the solo album again. How about East Side Story? I like this, too.
That's one of my favorite ones to play.
All right, cool. Here we go. East Side Story, Cheetah Chrome. Story. That's Cheetah Chrome. And Cheetah, I got to say, in some ways it's cool. You know, I guess now people can just download a song at a time if they want something. You know, if they want
to
hear the music.
They have to buy the whole CD in my case.
Yes, yes. They have to buy. Because let me tell you, there's not a clunker on this. I've listened to it over and over and over and over. So don't even try to buy one or two at a time. Just get the whole solo Cheetah Chrome CD. Hopefully you've already got Young, Loud, and Snotty and everything else, but...
Well, buy it again if you don't.
Buy it again!
Even if you do, buy it again, you know? Yeah.
You
know,
I like it. Get it
again.
You
know you're going to wear it out anyway, so you might buy ahead of time.
Oh, heck yeah.
I will definitely sell more than one copy of any of my records to a person.
So, use the other one for... there you go, I got the CD. Use it for a coaster, but... Okay, I've got a couple of questions for you from people. Somebody sent them in. I think I've got somebody on the phone in just a second. But before I tell you that, I do have to say something else. Folks, you know, it's football season, football time, and I've got to tell you about NFL Sunday Ticket. It's an app that's going to be on my website. It's from DirecTV, and they can put you, you can watch your favorite team from wherever you are. You only have to have this app called NFL Sunday Ticket. So I'm going to give you a phone number, 1-800-653-1730. It's 1-800-653-1730. Get NFL Sunday Ticket. You can watch all football games every Sunday. If you don't live close to your team, you can still watch them instead of watching the local team. This is one of, if not the cheapest price out. So it's a great deal, and check it out, and then I'll have some more information for it on the Madam Perry Salon page on Facebook. Now, where are we going to start? I've got somebody here in the studio with us. Oh, I'll give a call. Let me see. And I'm not sure I recognize the number. Hi, this is Madam Perry. Who is this?
Hello.
Hey.
What are you wearing? Both of you. Because it sounds sounds like you're having a slumber party listening to records over there.
No, I'm stark bollocks naked here, you know.
So. That's how I like it,
man. Yes, it's Cheetah Chrome and Madam Perry. Yes, we're having a slumber party. But unlike some, you know, we're not going to call up boys all night and do each other's hair. He might do mine off his head.
They're co-ed these days. Well, you haven't heard yet? The kids, when they have a slumber party, they're co-ed now.
Oh, not that I've heard.
They go do a sleepover, and they bring their own ecstasy at, like, 12 years old and shit.
You know, this sounds like an old punk rocker on the phone.
It does. That's all I probably know.
Yeah. I think there's, like, maybe 1 degree of separation here.
Yeah, probably. Sounds familiar, actually.
Is this coming in from Miami?
Yes, it's me. It's me, my dear mellifluous lady. It is Liz Savant.
Meet my friend Lynn Savant. He was in a band called The Restraints in Atlanta. And I'm glad to know in your book you have fond memories of Atlanta. And Lynn says you knew the singer from the band or had some association. Yes. Go ahead, Lynn, you're on.
Actually, I think it was Stiv that was a friend of
Stiv,
Chris Woods. Chris was a little homongulous pop bottle glasses and a shaved head.
Okay.
Way back in the day, and he used to stick a syringe in his forehead, and we had a lot of real weird, wacky kind of Spike Jones kind of novelty punk kind of.
I think he didn't know there were no veins in his forehead.
It was just he would fill the plunger with lighter fluid. He would fill it with lighter fluid and set the thing on fire while it was stuck in his forehead.
Okay, that's a gimmick. And that didn't sell to the general public. Jeez,
we couldn't tone it down enough for the Holiday Inn.
Well, actually, Lynn was a guitar player, and Lynn's a great guitar player. And he's got a book on it. It's not published yet. I may talk him into self-pubbing, but it's called The 13th Restraint because he was the 13th person to be in the band. And he said that when he first saw the band, he heard about them, that he asked the bartender where he was. Lynn says, is this band any good? And what did the bartender say, Lynn?
What, is Chris's band good?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he said they packed the Agora, you know, they packed not the Fox, but the Agora and their club several times over at the Bistro over there. I don't know if Cheetah ever went over there or not.
I think Cheetah played the Agora.
I know we played the Agora. I know we were at Foxy's next door to the place.
Yeah, it was right across the street. Did you ever play at 688?
I played there with my band. I think the Dead Boys never played there.
Right. Okay. I think,
Lynn, and this was in your book that was so well, the way you put this. You said, I asked the bartender, is Chris's band any good? Because you saw him come in and people were talking to him, and the bartender says, is he any good? Man, he gets on stage, sticks a syringe in his head, and lights it on fire. Like, oh, okay. He's great.
That's entertainment.
What else do you need to know?
It is. It's very entertaining. It's no different than hanging yourself from your mic cord.
You want to steal that act and go on America's Got Talent.
Yeah, we should. We should revive
you know?
That. Like a,
yeah, revive
a bunch of geriatrics.
It. Yeah, just go out there and say, you know, I mean, that would definitely get the people out of their seats now, you know? I think
absolutely.
The audience is ready for it now.
The
now
geriatric
is the time
function.
For something like that. Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, you guys, you guys sound like you're having a great time. I got to run out the door. It's a great show. I really liked your music. I like Rolling Thunder a lot. The intro bass riff was very Mark Sandman. You hip to him, Mark Sandman from Morphine?
Yeah, that's what I am.
Yeah,
that
was kind of, yeah, that was a great one-off band. Anyway, y'all are doing a terrific job, both of you, and I'm going to get the book, and I'm going to read it front to back.
Definitely get
too.
This book.
Yeah.
Hey, Lynn, thanks
right,
for calling, sweetie.
You got it. Have a good show, guys.
Take care, man.
Bye-bye.
All right, that was Lynn Savant. What a guy. He's a real sweetheart and a great guitar player, and he makes guitars, too. So got some questions. Now, my friend David Hurley, who is a poet, author, and editor, publisher of Subtlety Magazine, says he messages in his questions. He says, I don't know where to begin. I especially dig Rocket from the Tombs live album, mid-70s, I think. There's so much I want to know. I guess I'll resort to my biggest curiosities. I'm sure you met the Ramones, but not sure if you ever played on the same night. At CBGB, probably. If so, what was that like, and how about the Buzzcocks?
We never did the CBGBs with the Ramones, except for the Blitz benefit. And I'm not even sure if we played the same night. I think they played the night before us. We played like up in Canada and Toronto. I know we played with them. I think in Ohio we played one time with them, but not at CBGB's. And what was the second part of the question?
Let's see. You said, and how about the Buzzcocks?
No, the Buzzcocks, actually the closest I ever came to the Buzzcocks was 2005. I think we played Rock from the Tombs, played a gig over in Kassel, Germany. They had what was called a punk congress over there. And we headlined one night, and the Buzzcocks headlined the night before. And I had a really bad backache and stayed in my room that night. Didn't get to see the Buzzcocks. I never met any of them. So that's my big Buzzcock story.
Okay.
But I do like the Buzzcocks. I wish I had seen them.
Well, let's see, and he also has, David Hurley has more questions. He has, what was the circumstance that had none other than John Belushi drumming for the band temporarily?
Well, that was when Johnny got stabbed and we had the Blitz benefit. It was like 1978, like April, I think. You know, Johnny was going home from a gig, and him and Michael, our roadie, were with a couple of girls, and they went to Deli Stop, restaurant down the street, and on the way to catch a cab, somebody swerved a car at him, and a couple of the girls were like, hey, assholes, something like that, and they gave him the finger, and next thing you know, the car jammed out his brakes, a bunch of guys piled out, needless to say, a fight ensued, and Johnny got stabbed. And so in order to pay some medical expenses, we threw a four-night benefit for him at
Wow, so that's when, and Belushi was already a fan of yours anyway. He came out there and saw you.
Well, yeah, well, he was a friend of ours. Yeah, he had come.
And a friend.
And when we played our set, we had Jerry Nolan playing drums for us. We combined New York Doll songs and Dead Boy songs, you know. And the second night, John came down. And he wanted to sit down on a song, and you know, he wanted to play Sonic Reducer. It was really bad. Of course, he couldn't. He was a blues drummer. He played, you know. And he knew damn well he didn't have a chance in hell of keeping up, but he wanted to. He wanted to try. So he got back there, and it was great because, I mean, you know, he's just a sweetheart. And he had this real serious look on his face trying to get that middle part, you know. And it was hysterical. I couldn't turn around and look at it. I had to keep, you know, I couldn't watch. I had to see the video finally saw the video to watch it because I would have cracked up, wouldn't be able to finish if I'd seen him.
But see, those are the band backstories that, you know, people don't know. It's like a subtext or a sublayer going on. It's happening at the same time that people see, but they don't see. And that's like, you're not wanting to look at him because you know he knows, but you know he wants to do it. He's a good guy. He's got a good heart. He's a good blues drummer. But, and you know, if you take one look at him.
Well, yeah. So, you know, I would crack up and I wouldn't be able to. That would have been it. Right. You know?
And let's see. Okay, and David Hurley also says, oh, he's got two more things. Okay, one was, he said that last song was awesome. What was the name? That was East Side Story. He says, also, what do you think of the band Rocket from the Crypt playing off of your Rocket from the Tombs? The name, that is.
Oh, well, you know, obviously they never anticipated we would get back together again. And, you know, it was pretty funny that we played a gig in San Diego. We played like our first gig of our tour was in San Diego back in like 2003. And a couple of those guys came up and they were like, oh, hi, we're from Rock from the Crypt. And I was like, oh, man, nice to meet you guys. What are you changing your name to? And, you know, of course, they kept it. So I thought that was pretty funny. You know, David was a little upset because that was his dream. That was his baby, you know, the name.
Yeah.
But you know, we thought it was funny because they didn't have a clue we'd ever get back together. We didn't. How could they?
Really? All right. Well, you can just look at it as a, you know, a fan of flattery.
Yeah,
or whatever.
That's what I know. I take it, you know.
Yeah.
Either that or just plain thievery, you know, just so you don't have any imagination of their own, you decide to steal it.
Uh-huh.
I'm just kidding.
All right. So if you want to talk to Cheetah Crobe or ask him a question, you can call it here, 646-716-9922. He's a fascinating man. So, let's see.
Don't all call at once now, yeah.
Yeah, not everybody at once. I think they're kind of afraid because, let me tell you something. I checked the stats. There were 300 people that tried to hit on the link for the show yesterday before it even.
Oh, cool.
I said,
well,
the
I had,
show's not on yet, but they're hit. But I think people are afraid. He's really a nice guy.
Yeah, I made a mistake yesterday. I put it up there. Oh, it's good, you know, tonight at 6. And then
I was telling them.
Asked somebody what day it was, and they were like, oh, it's Wednesday. Because I was ready to go, you know, call you and then pack my suitcase. Run out of the day early, you know. So.
Well, you know. So, yeah, because there's a lot of musicians, too. I know definitely here in Atlanta that wanted to talk to you. A friend of mine, Lori Lee, whose boyfriend is our mutual pal, you know, Rick Richards.
Yes, yes.
And they said, you ought to have Cheetah's friend Luigi come on. Luigi has all kind of great stories.
Yeah, he does. Luigi was there, that's for sure.
Yeah, so I think Luigi was flying from New York to L.A. today, so I don't know if he's jet lagged or what, but I don't see Luigi calling in. So anyway,
good man, Luigi. I love Luigi.
Yeah, he seems like a good guy. I've never met him, but I've known Rick since. Well, because we're both, you know, in Atlanta. I've known him about 20 years or so.
You know, I got a lot of friends in Atlanta. I've got a, you know, all the guys in Driving and Crying, and you know, we just over the years I've met several good friends down there.
Well, now, do you want to go ahead and move up to talk about when you moved to Nashville and working with Plowboy Records? Because when I first heard about you, I think it was Shannon Pollard was being interviewed on a music business podcast I was listening to a couple of years ago, when he was talking about how you would come there and you were working with Plowboy.
Well, yeah, I had been in Nashville since 1996. Mm-hmm. And actually, I met Shannon when our kids were going to the same school. They were in the same class. And so, you know, we'd go to the birthday parties and, you know, me and him started talking. It turned out he knew who I was. And, you know, most of the other parents there didn't. I mean, it was just weird school. I mean, Jack White's kids were going there. And, you know, we didn't mix well with all the other adults sometimes, you know, at first. I mean, now it's like, you know, I've been on a couple camping trips with the dads and all that. So now we're all buddies. But, what do you call it? The label idea came when I was getting ready to come off. I wanted to get off the road. I was on the road a lot because I had gone out with the Matusis and we'd, you know, the Rockets, and we had done a book tour, and it was, you know, I had a kid that, you know, I wanted to see him grow up and all that, you know, and it was, I wanted to spend more time with him. So I wanted to get off the road, and Shannon had this idea to start a label on the back burner for a couple of years with his friend Don Cusick, who had done a biography of his grandfather, Eddie Arnold.
Mm-hmm.
And what he wanted to do is he wanted to start off doing a tribute to Eddie Arnold. And then have that be the first record to come out, and then have a, you know, and then sign some bands that we kind of wanted, you know, the kind of bands we wanted to see get signed, you know? And
yeah.
So it was pretty cool because of the Eddie Arnold tribute, it was like 19 artists on it. We got, you know, I was able to get, you know, we got Bear Jr., got Chuck Mead, Driving and Crying, had Alejandro Escovedo. Frank Black did a song, you know, plus we have some of the usual country people like Mandy Barnett and Melinda Doolittle, Chuck Mead, you know. It was really well around. We had Peter Noon on it, you know.
Yeah. He lives in Nashville, doesn't he?
His daughter was going to school there. He was going back and forth a lot. He lives in Santa Barbara, but he was coming to Nashville an awful lot. And talk about a great guy. And we got to hang out with him quite a bit. We're still good friends. And he's one of the funniest people on the planet. He's great. but that was our first thing. It ended up being, we did Bobby Bear's record first because he just wanted to put out a record. And all of a sudden, you know, Don was like, well, we can produce it. We got a label. And he was like, okay, you know. So next thing you know, we're rushing to put out a Bobby Bear record. But it came out great, and it got him in the Hall of Fame, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it was nice. And I got to come down here and do South by Southwest with him. And you know, it was all fun. And
weren't you director of the special projects when we were putting together the Eddie Arnold tribute album?
I was basically creative director, A&R, and director for special projects, which and then I ended up like producing. You know, like I produced the tribute. I produced J.D. Wilkes' album, produced my stuff, you know. It was a lot of fun. But the whole tribute album, you know, it was like a year and a half, you know, took to do. And that was just a blast because I was in the studio constantly with different artists and, you know, mixing. The mixing alone took like 3 or 4 months, you know. It was a lot of fun.
I bet. Well, see, that's why when I knew that you had, you know, even though you grew up in Ohio and you lived in New York, once I knew that you had lived in Nashville, I knew that, you know, we wouldn't need a translator for my accent.
You know, I love Nashville. It's a great city, you know. It's I had managed to stay out of the music business there, though, for, you know, and I actually, you know, purposely did that because it was, I kind of like what I just wanted to live there. I didn't want to, you know, get involved in it. But then with the Plowboy thing, I ended up, you know, up to my ears in it, and it was great. You know, all those people, you know, you meet all these session guys, and they're all punk rockers and stuff, you know? I mean, yeah, you know, Dave Rowe, he played bass with Johnny Cash for, you know, 15 years, mm-hmm. and maybe he's going to play with a punk band before that, you know? And he had a bunch of them were. It was great.
Yeah, so he said, so it's kind of like a new place for you, but yet it was it must have been kind of homey then, because you know everybody seemed to welcome you. From what I read in the book, people were glad to meet you. That you meet people you've known or you got common history with. So it's not, you know, sometimes for people who have lived outside the South, it can seem like a real foreign territory down here.
Yeah, well, still, it does. At first, it was a little daunting, but you know, I fell in love with the place immediately. You know, and. You know, same thing with Austin. I like Austin a lot. Big music town. You know, it's a little bit, a little more live oriented than Nashville. It's got more rock and roll for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I was there a couple of years ago with a client for a book event, and I remember because it was the first time I'd been there. And so my client's book was about. It was his first book event, and I knew he was going to be shy, so I had to come up with something that would draw attention, but not make him nervous. So I got the Barnes & Noble there at Sunset Valley to let me do kind of not a complete pop-up club, but because the book is about a cop, kind of a mediocre homicide cop with a bad crack habit. And so he ends up getting so bad in his habit that he gets demoted from homicide to the file room and then rehab. And when he comes out, the only people that will give him a job is the drug dealers that he used to chase. And he ends up being great at that and takes over. Next thing you know, he's got all the territory. He's got the hookers. He's got nightclubs. He's got payday loans. So, and he's much better at that than he was at being a cop. So so for the book, I told him, that's when I had my friend Coco Electric, the burlesque queen there. I had her come out and read, and she said, what do you mean to do with burlesque? I said, no, honey, you could walk in a sweater, and you could walk in a potato sack. They're going to know you're a burlesque queen. Just read with him the parts, and that'll take some pressure off him because he knows he'll think everybody's looking at you, and they will be. But so anyway, and then we went to the club that night. I think it's called the Saxon Pub to see Soul Hat, a good band.
Yeah, that's
there.
Where we
really
had our showcase.
Band.
Yeah, I love
really?
That place. Just,
yeah,
we did our showcase. Oh boy, we did two showcases there. Yeah, it's a great place.
Oh no, Ken, it is. It's a nice, cozy little pub feel.
Yes, it is.
I liked it. So. Yeah, so it's a fun little place. Well, I'll tell you what, I want to play something else with the song. What else? What would you want people to know? I mean, I can tell people why I think they should buy the book and the record. What would you tell people?
Oh, I said, well, obviously you should buy both. You know?
Okay.
But,
you heard it from
the
man himself.
Yeah, and if you go up to the, you know, you go to the Plowboy website, it takes right to them.
All right. Well, listen.
They got T-shirts, too. I have a T-shirt, too.
Get out. Get a get the whole wardrobe. Get the setup. Is there a lunchbox?
I think they've got – no, but we're working on that. But I think, actually, they got a deal on it where you get a T-shirt, the album, or the CD, the album, and something else for, you know, a discount. I
all
do
right.
believe they got that going, so.
Okay.
It's like a bundle of some sort.
Get the package, get the bundle. All right, Gina, if you're going to stay with me just a few more minutes, if you don't mind.
Okay.
I want to I gotta tell people about something else good that'll be also enhance their lives, just like your music and your book and the T-shirt. And that's something called, you know, everybody talks about wanting to get out and get in shape. Do you do any kind of workout or yoga or anything or run?
Yeah, I do. I get out and walk once in a while. And play video games a lot. My thumbs are in great shape.
I can imagine I can well imagine that. So
I get to the gym once in a while. Not like I used to, but I get enough exercise. Yeah.
Well, there is a great gal named Maureen. She has a business. Well, she has a podcast. It's called Audible Yoga, and you can find it at Audible, like you know, listen, audibleyoga.com. And what it is, you can download the different sessions on iTunes. So if you want to do yoga, you don't have time to go to the gym, or you know, you're on a budget, you need to allot your money somewhere else, you can just download these for free at home. And she talks you through everything. They talk to you and every bit of the way, and they're very, very nice. So I'm going to have information on audibleyoga.com on the Madam Perry Salon page on Facebook. And, yeah, I used to get up at 4:30. I started it last summer. and going to CrossFit in the mornings, and you know, things like I drive 19 miles and I come back with the sweat dripping in my eyes, and you know, it was great. I enjoyed it, but sometimes it's nice just to kind of roll out of bed and do it, and then get back in.
Oh yeah, so, no, definitely. I like to get back in the bed after exercising.
Yeah, because when I came,
I'm getting along. I'm getting along in years, so I don't, you know, I don't kill myself anymore.
No, listen, that's what I wanted to say to you, Cheetah. After reading about your book, knowing how old you are, knowing you came up in the hard days, you know, these kids these days, they don't know how good they've got it. They can sit and do a gig from home. They can just make their seat. They can make their music at home, put it up to sell on the internet, use the internet to go. You know, you guys had to get out and put up flyers. You know, there used to be a saying back in the 80s in Atlanta that to, you know, be a successful band, you know, all you needed was a, well, the bands needed a three chords, a bad haircut, and a staple gun.
Yes, exactly.
To put up your flyers.
And a street team.
Yeah, these kids got it made. And yet, you did it, you know, the hard way, and then, you know, with drug addiction and going in rehab and then coming out, and you look fantastic. And I put I put up the video of you playing Sonic Reducer against the white background, and I don't know when that was made. I know 4 or 5 years ago, and see the pictures here. Yeah, you look great.
I'm reasonably good shape considering the life I've led. You know, I've been very lucky. Us O'Connors are, you know, got tolerances like mooses for abuse. So,
Your family, the O'Connor family, you're from, you trace them back to Ireland?
Yeah, to County Roscommon. Yeah.
Yeah. So, pretty sturdy stock there. Well, before, I do want to play, I feel like I can't get away before letting you leave without playing, if it's okay with you, Sonic Reducer.
Oh, of course.
No.
No, I do love that song. It's one that's always, it's funny, you think I get sick of playing it, and sometimes I do, but as soon as I start playing it, you know, like, I see it on the set list, like, oh, shit, I got to play that again. But then once I start at the beginning, it's always fun. So,
okay.
You know, still one of my favorites.
You don't have to play it. I'll play it now.
Okay. That day. Yeah.
I don't need it.
Some other people sending in messages. David Hurley sent back, excellent show, Jennifer and Cheetah.
Oh.
And then who was it? Lynn Savant called back in. Messaged back in. Great show. He's having a good time listening. And there's a lot of people that have been excited about this show. I think they're just a little bashful.
Well,
or
tell them not to be. I mean, they need to, you know. Get over it.
Seriously.
Call in, people. Call in.
I know. Well, I always tell them. I always think it's mean. I go, I'm not as mean as I look, I swear.
All right.
Not really. Okay, I got a couple.
Doing too long. Oh, you got someone?
I got two, actually.
All right.
I think I need to
say
hi. Jules Perry.
This is Jules. Yes.
How you doing?
I just want to say I'm doing good. How are you doing tonight?
Doing great. Jules Perry, meet Cheetah Chrome.
How you doing there?
Hi, Cheetah. How
nice
are all you beautiful animals doing this evening?
Just wonderful. Just wonderful.
It makes me happy that you have endured.
Me too. Compared to the other bird, you know, the other possibilities.
Well, yeah, but, you know, for you, it's like, you know, you're like someone almost, like, that I never knew, but I grew up with, you know? It's like, you know, you're the guy from my old neighborhood. You're, you know, the survivor, so to speak.
So far.
So far.
That's kind of a good description. Kenya's here, too. Kenya?
Hi. Hi, Cheetah.
Whoa. Hello.
Hey.
How are you tonight?
Well, I'm good. I think my ear's blown. Wait, no.
That's me with my big mouth. I'm sorry. I'll whisper. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I have a very big voice. I'm sorry.
Yeah, because you project, doesn't it?
It does. I'm sorry. I am loving the interview tonight. Sounding good, my friend. I like.
Well, glad. I'm glad you're enjoying it.
I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that, too, Cheetah. Now, to let you know, full disclosure, Kenya is my BFF. And I'm glad she's got a little something to say to you. But also, Jules Perry, now there's no relation. However, Jules is a friend of mine, good friend of mine, and she's one of the punkinest punk girls I know. She's in North Carolina now. But when she was in Atlanta, she did a lot of photography of a lot of bands. In fact, even one of the photos she did of Elvis Costello, he put on his website, one of her photos. So she's sort of like the rock and punk photo documentarian in town.
Oh, okay.
Woohoo, Jules!
And what is there to do in North Carolina punk-wise? I mean, the last time I was there, it wasn't a whole hell of a lot.
There's really not. I mean, you know, there's a little club called Ziggy's in Charlotte, which seems to have a few interesting, shows over there. But in my neck of the woods, I haven't found anything yet. So I'm kind of in my own little island.
Well, if you find anything, let us know.
Oh,
well,
I certainly will. Hey, can you share?
I'm in Atlanta now because I've still got, you know, a house here that I've got to get rented out again. But my husband and I, he works in Asheville, and so we live up there in a place called Mars Hill. Mars Hill is just a few exits up from Jupiter, just so you'll know.
Okay, yeah. I know, I've been up there. I've been to Asheville, I've been to Batcave, too. That's a very strange place.
Batcave, yes! You know where the Batcave is. It's in Transylvania County. Exit 49A, Batcave.
But that was pretty
I
want to cool.
live
what
there just for the
Rock? Address. Yeah, what is it called, Chimney Rock? Is that another place up there?
Yeah, but you know what? You could come play. I would love for you to come play at Asheville at the Orange Peel. I think that would be a great venue. And they don't get a lot of punk, but I've seen the the P First, Psychedelic Furs have been there, and you know, some other bands like that coming through.
Oh, cool. Well, yeah, I'm going to be getting out a lot in January. We're going to start touring for in earnest. Yeah, I'm going to be, now that I'm, you know, unencumbered, I'm going to be touring a lot more. So I'll be, you know, I'll be getting out to like an old blues guy and, you know, the never-ending tour.
like an elder statesman of the blues and punk?
Well, yeah, you know, like, you know, do like Dylan and just like just keep, you know, it'll be, just be one big tour from now on.
Yeah, don't call it another farewell tour like the Judge. Just call it the Endless Tour. Just keep going with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, these days, you know, in the music business, you're going to have to work till 80, you know. So.
Well, yeah. You know, there's one thing I read in your book that you guys did, and just really, and you were pretty relentless on this as well, especially the early days when you were in New York, the Dead Boys are playing, you do a lot of CBGBs and Maxes. You guys were really, really hardcore into practical jokes.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, now, of course.
Now, Kenya will be the first person to tell you that I would never pull a practical joke on anyone.
Oh, my God, she's famous for them. She's bad sometimes because she's so good at it.
Yeah.
It's like,
no,
like you just don't know it's happening
Kenya.
Until you've been blindsided.
Don't lie to this man. Don't lie to this man.
Exactly, Jules. Exactly.
We've got somebody else here. Hopefully this person will be on my side. Hi, this is Madam Perry and Cheetah Chrome and Jules and Kenya.
Hello.
Hey.
Yeah, good morning.
Hey. Good morning.
Hey,
this is,
who's this?
This is Johnny. Johnny in Atlanta.
Johnny Daly?
That's me.
Hey, how you doing?
Is this Jules? Hey.
You know everybody listens
Hi,
to
Hi, Johnny.
Song?
Who's that?
Hi, Johnny.
Eventually, yeah. You know, I'm no rock star, but I can get a following. Well, actually, Jules, Johnny, I think Johnny thought I was Jules because when you put something on the event about Cheetah, you said, thanks, Jules, but I'm not Jules.
Okay. Don't matter.
Tony Harris thought we were related. Okay, good. No, we can dig
so,
it.
So, Cheetah.
Yeah.
I was in New York in around 1977, 78.
Okay.
And the punk scene is just catching a fire.
Okay.
I'm curious to know how it was that you got involved in the burgeoning scene that was happening down there or up there. Who were you listening to? Who did you meet? Where did you play? How did you? I mean, I remember it coming over from England and the excitement of what was happening in the music business at that time. And what was happening is just sort of went through the roof. It was awesome. The energy, the power, the whole do-it-yourself attitude, it was great. And I was just curious to see how it was that you were exposed to it in New York City.
Well, we, you know, we were playing rock, right ahead of Rock from the Tombs in Cleveland, and, you know, we were considered, we weren't really considered a punk band, you know, but we were definitely not your normal Cleveland band. We weren't the Raspberries for sure. And so we eventually went and saw the Ramones play at the Tomorrow
uh-huh.
Club, and we uh-huh. met the Ramones that night, and they kind of said, hey, you guys need to come up to New York. And that was on their instigation. Joey's especially. Joey and Steve became good friends, and they stayed in touch. Uh-huh. And Joey kept telling them, oh, you need to come up and play in New York. And we said, you know, finally we agreed, okay, we will. Because it was, you know, quite the project to get everybody together. And, you know, we all had jobs and crap. We had to, you know, schedule a gig. And he made it where we didn't have to play a audition, which is nice. He just booked us. And then when we got up there, Joey had gone and gotten, like, a bunch of people, like Legs McNeil and John Holmstrom and Roberta Bailey from Punk Magazine and Danny Fields and all these people from the scene and got them down to CBGB's to see us. And, you know, they loved us. So
well, who was in your band at the time?
Well, it was everybody. It was except for Jeff.
Okay.
It was all the Dead Boys except for Jeff, and You know, we had a band. We changed our name to Frankenstein. At first we called Frankenstein, and we did that for two gigs, and then it was just kind of no real reason to keep it going. So we stopped, and we kind of regrouped, and that's when we decided to go to New York. And when we made that decision, Jeff didn't want to go, so we went up there with no bass player, and we played a couple gigs with no bass player. And then we got John DeSalvo from the Tough Darts to sit in with us until we got a contract. And then finally, then Jeff was interested again. So
was this around 77?
Yeah, well, our first gig was probably August of 76.
76, yeah.
Yeah, and then our first record came out like in 77. We recorded in February 77.
That's cool. That was a hell of a scene. A lot of bands,
a lot
of good music. Did you ever get a chance to play with or go see, I'm sure you did, but just for all of us, just treat us, get a chance to go see Television.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
Actually, I saw Television in Cleveland the first time. They played with Rock from the Tombs. We warmed up for them.
Wow.
And that was just great. That was really an excellent show. But I've seen some great shows with those. And, you know, and Richard joined Rocket from the Tombs later on in 2003.
Yeah.
He replaced Peter Loftner.
Yeah. I know that they've done a lot of work outside of the two guitar players, Tom Verlaine and Richard. Yeah, that's really cool. It's very
Richard
cool.
And me, he's one of my favorite guitar players to play
God,
with.
God, is he incredible or what?
He's a wonderful human being to, you know, hang out with. He's,
well,
you know, great,
to know.
Great guy. Yeah.
That's cool. So, highlights of those years, and I don't mean to harp on those years, but they kind of put you on the map, as it were. You've stayed there on your own, but I mean, the Dead Boys, you're talking legendary status as far as the East Coast punk scene from the roots. This is really cool. So, what were some of your standout moments?
Let me see. Standout
all of
moments.
Them, huh?
You know, it's
is it a hard question?
Hard. I mean, I loved all the gigs. I mean, you know, playing with those guys was always wonderful. I mean,
yeah.
You know, there were some gigs were better than others, but you know, none of them. It's too much time's gone by for anyone to jump out at me.
How did
you know?
America treat you when you left New York as the Dead Boys? Did they understand what you all were doing? Did they get it, or were they just? Was it a novelty to them?
On the coast, they did. You know, like when you got to like Boston was a good town, Philly was a good town, you know, Atlanta was a good town. When we got to Texas, we had some problems.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't have problems. I mean, we had good draws and everything. And people were friendly, but they were just a little put off by us. You know, in the Midwest, a lot of the gigs we did with were Iggy, so you know we had a built-in crowd with him. You know,
cool, yeah, cool.
Yeah, but it was a little difficult to, you know, especially to impress and all that, because these people did not have a clue who we were, and they would ask us questions like, "What do you guys eat?" You know,
yeah, and it was it was scary,
you know,
it was dangerous what rock and roll was supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, it was really, it was fun, you know, and definitely we lived it to the hilt, you know.
That's cool. One last question, or two, I got, what kind of guitars were you playing? Just humor me.
Oh, I was using Melody Makers and SGs mostly. In 78, I switched over to just one of the SGs and a Les Paul. The SG was one I bought from Glenn Buxton from Alice Cooper that he had used on I'm 18. Yeah, it was an amazing guitar. And the Les Paul ended up getting stolen, but,
Do you still have that SG?
That went the way of all things, but I've still got some dislocation in my shoulder from the Les Paul.
Wow, so. Cool. One last question.
Okay.
You're in Austin, right? So
yeah.
A lot of people have moved away from Atlanta in the last 10 years or so. There's a guy out there, Stevie Tombstone. Are you familiar with him?
I haven't met him yet.
Well, he's playing around all the time. He's a great musician, great singer-songwriter. If you get a chance, just go see him.
Okay, I'll do that.
I mean, because I know there's nobody else playing in Austin, so. All right.
Yeah.
Pleasure. a pleasure to have taken your time, and
Johnny,
I've been listening this whole time. Yeah, yeah.
Hey, Johnny, I'm so glad you called, and I'm glad that you were commenting. You shared this on your Facebook yesterday, and I really appreciated that. So,
yeah.
Cheetah
Crow,
only got a few,
are you kidding?
I know. Cheetah Crow. And, you know, I can't even believe it. So, Cheetah, I am very honored that you've just been so generous with your time with me here tonight.
Oh, my pleasure.
But we've only got a few more minutes left. So Johnny, why don't you hang out here? Because, you know, if you look around you, Johnny, you see that Madame Perry's salon looks like the inside of Jeannie's bottle. So it's meant to be a comfortable place. You can just kind of hang out.
It's bigger on the inside.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like...
I'm not going to touch that.
But like the Beatles the little, apartment. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, little
cool. That's cool.
The beaded curtains, the whole thing. So were you here at the beginning, Johnny, when Mr. Sulu let Cheetah in?
No, I missed that. I've been working. I'm crazy busy right now.
Oh, okay. Well,
so, I mean, I'm on the phone right now listening. So,
and well, I'm glad.
Pardon me?
I'm just glad that you joined us. I'm glad you listened.
Me
glad
too.
You shared it. Appreciate it.
Me too. Me too. I wanted to find out what it was, you know, from the source. I saw a lot of those bands back then when I was up there. Now I was an older teenager. I'm 55 now, and I was 17 in 77, and I was kicking around, and the drinking age was 18, and I was going taking the train into the city and seeing some of these bands. I never saw the Dead Boys, but I saw countless others. I saw the Ramones. I saw the Dictators. I saw I can't remember. There's so many. But that whole scene was just alive, and it was dangerous.
You weren't trying hard enough. You didn't see us.
I know. Maybe you were touring. Who knows?
Here's something else I want to ask you. While I was looking for images and pictures of you to put on my slideshow here, what was the thing I found with this? Because I was going to tell Johnny, well, there's plenty of video from back then. You know, it's not like video today, say that, but there's a video of the Dead Boys and Fine Things and Cheetah. However, and I've been enjoying listening to you, watching your other video interviews on YouTube, Cheetah, but I came across this thing of pictures that says Rupert Grint does Cheetah Curl. Rupert Grint from the Harry Potter movies, Ron Weasley.
Yeah.
He's playing you in a documentary or a video. What's up with that?
No, it's a movie. It's a movie about CBGB.
Uh-huh.
It's called CBGB, and it's, you know, it's basically the story of Hilly's, you know, forming the club, you know, and getting it together and all that. And, and they got Rupert to play me, and he did a wonderful job. Man, he's just like me in the old days.
He
should get an Oscar for it. He was really good. Yeah, I mean, he even talks like me. You know, he had the whole thing down. He was really good. He had my walk down.
I'll have to see that.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Okay. See, that's when it's cool when you're somebody when they hire an actor to play you in a movie.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that means
who's
the legend
you?
Is really established.
It was cool, and I was on set when he was there doing it. It was a lot of fun hanging out with him.
Oh,
we've
really?
Hung out a couple times since, yeah. And, he really got into punk rock when he was making the movie. He really got into it. And, you know, now he's, you know, he's dressing a little bit more rock and roll. And last time I saw him, he had a mascara on. So, you know, he was doing a Broadway show. That's what he had on. But we went down to Manitoba's. I played in Manitoba's in New York, and he came down to that, and it was fun. You know, we had to catch up and have a couple beers, and it was a good time.
All right, I've got about
really
5 minutes
guy.
Left. So,
okay.
Excuse me. I've got about 5 minutes left. That's another thing, Cheetah. I want to know. You know, you've got another book, and you're ready. Surely close to being there, and you got another CD coming soon, I know. But I wanted to know, with this great body of work and the experiences, and as creative as you are, do you see you doing something with a stage or theater or film? I mean, you know, if Green Day puts on a Broadway show, surely Cheetah Crow.
No.
No, I mean, I'd probably, you know, take a stab at, you know, a part in something, but nah, I wouldn't. I'm not really just for the experience. I mean, I had a cameo in the movie, and that was kind of fun, you know. I don't know at this point. Like, Broadway doesn't interest me at all. Film just sounds like, you know, I'd rather just have them license a Dead Boy song, you know.
Right. Write a record that, write a record about a time traveling punk rocker that comes back from the old days and tries to set the record straight. Show all these kids how it's done.
Right. Well, that's, I'm still doing that, so it's, you know.
Right on. Right on.
Yeah. See, I don't have to be. I don't need a time travel. I'm still here. So.
You know what I mean.
I just get out there and play gigs. You know, I just get out there and play gigs and.
Right on.
School them, you know.
God bless you, man. I gotta go.
Yeah. All right,
thanks,
man. Thanks,
Johnny.
For
appreciate
in.
It.
All right, y'all take care.
Thanks.
Bye.
All right, Cheetah.
Yes.
You know, I think I told you that. I hope I didn't wear out my welcome with you. I think I told you it was an hour show, but I had planned.
Okay.
I reserved an hour and a half in the studio just in case we were rolling, and I'm just so grateful that you stayed here so long. I know I need to let you go, and.
Thank you. Well, it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed doing it. Anytime you want me, I'm here.
Thank you so much. Don't forget to tell Sylvain to call. And please come back sometime.
Oh, I definitely will.
All right. And everybody,
thank you very much
there,
for having me.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. Don't forget, get Solo, Cheetah Chrome, and then go back and get the Dead Boys. Get everything he's got. Get the whole catalog, because like I said, there's not a clunker in the bunch. And then maybe one time, maybe next time, Kenya will tell you whatever this fantasy is she has of me playing practical jokes.
Okay, yeah, because I got some practical joke stories too. I mean, Siv was the one that was the ringleader for that, but I still do some myself. So
we got to catch up on those then. We got to do this again just for that.
See, yours seem to me they seem kind of. Self-sabotage. I mean, Stiv puts what itching powder in your drummer's underwear? I mean, come on.
No, that was me.
That was you.
Yeah, no, he.
Oh my God.
Oh, that's evil.
Well, we had gone over. He had stolen some beers from me out of my refrigerator, so he made a mistake of going back to his room. He left his jeans that he had been carrying his jeans that he was going to wear on stage that night, and forgot them, left them laying on Siv's bed, and I had itching powder, and it was like. I had to. There's no choice, you know.
It's kind of a trick shot, right? When you get stuff like that.
Yeah. So it's hilarious that, you know, put right across your jeans too.
Oh no.
Yeah. So.
There was no holding back.
Coach kind of like look over your shoulder, but not look suspicious.
It was hilarious because, like, we'd be playing, and he's like, you know, over there in between every song, he's like scratching and going, "Goddamn, I don't know what's going on." They got crabs or something.
Accusations were flying.
We kept laughing. We never laugh our ass off. Finally, about three quarters of the way through the set, it was like, "Hey, man, well, you know, Cheetah put itching powder in your jeans, you know." So,
oh, no.
Classic. You snooze, you lose. You know.
I bet that looks so funny.
So we had gone out. We had hit a joke shop. We were in Toronto. We had hit a joke shop on Yonge Street. You know. And so this back when Yonge Street was like Times Square, you know. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. We had itching powder and all kinds of ammo for months to come.
So you guys pull a lot of stuff like that though, where you would, you know, you guys have like immediate gratification on it.
Oh,
mine,
yeah,
I used to kind of do from a distance. I always say I do with my deeds in secret. Nobody even, I'm nowhere near the scene.
I do the subtle ones. Like one I did on Bader's one time. He had his girl make him a jacket, and when she brought it back to him, she was like, "Well, you know, I was getting short on material, so the one sleeve's like an eighth of an inch shorter than the other one." It's stupid. I could tell. He was like, "Oh no," you know. And so he was. It was really bothering him. I wouldn't have given a shit. You know, an eighth of an inch. Who's going to be able to tell, right? But he tried it on. You could tell he was trying to make sure it didn't show, you know, and all that. We went out to a concert. I think it was like Dolls and Kiss or something like that. And I was telling people, like, I saw somebody we knew. I go over and tell them, "Look, we see Stiff. Ask him if he knows one sleeve shorter than the other." You know, so everybody. was coming up and going, "Hey, man, how you doing?" And I'm like, "Wow, you know, he's one sleeve shorter than you."
Oh, my God.
Oh, then he got home and he just threw the thing in the trash. And I was like, "Oh, come on, man, I was kidding. That was a practical joke."
Nobody noticed.
Yeah, nobody would have noticed if I, you know, if he would have just kept his mouth open. That was too good to pass
up. That's
out.
Funny. Too you know? Funny. I like that one.
Yep. Playing with the New York Dolls. David Johansen would have just played through. He would have been, you know. But
yeah, I mean, nobody can judge an eighth of an inch by, you know, from a distance, you know, but Steve could.
He
so.
Could feel it.
Okay. All right. Well, I think now we're already cut off from the show, so it's just us hanging around.
Yeah.
So Kenya,
okay,
if you want to
go
any...
eat dinner.
Yeah.
Well,
okay,
dinner
guys. Well,
pack,
y'all have a good
pack
night.
My suitcase.
So Kenya can't tell any filthy lies about me and any tricks that she thinks I've played.
I won't.
I tell you, there ought to be the show of nothing but all the horrible, you know, technical jokes that everybody has played on each other. You know,
actually, that's good. That's
hey, Gina, have a wonderful,
like
have a good
that.
Dinner, have a pack,
okay.
Have a wonderful trip, and then of course we want to get you down to Atlanta and Asheville and everywhere. So, thanks again.
Well, after the first of the year, I'll be all over the place. So,
all right.
Well, it's nice
meeting
you.
Thank you very
Gina.
Much for
nice,
having me.
Nice,
nice
meeting
to meet
you.
You guys.
Okay. Bye bye.
Take care.
Bye.
Good night.
Jules.